Chapter 26. Admiral Sandecker stood at a podium and fielded questions thrown at him by the news media. If there was one thing the Admiral was not, it was a media narcissist. Though he always had good relations with press and TV reporters and often enjoyed their company on a one-to-one basis, he simply was not at home in the spotlight, nor was he comfortable evading or dancing around probing inquiries. There were times when Sandecker was simply too honest and outspoken for bureaucratic Washington. After 40 minutes of hard questions about Numa's role in the investigation of the tragic loss of the Emerald Dolphin, Sandecker was thankful that the news conference was winding down. "Can you tell us what your people found inside the wreck during their probe with the submersible?" asked a nationally recognized female TV reporter. "We believe we have found evidence suggesting that the fire was deliberately caused," replied Sandecker. "Can you describe the evidence?" "What looks like an incendiary material was found in the area where the ship's crew reported the fire started." "Have you identified this substance?" asked a reporter from the Washington Post. "It's over at the FBI lab as we speak," Sandecker hedged. "They should have results shortly." "What can you tell us about the terrorist hijacking of your survey vessel, the Deep Encounter?" This from a reporter with CNN. "Not much that you already don't know from previous reports. I wish I could tell you why criminal elements hijacked a Numa ship, but unfortunately none of the pirates responsible lived to tell the tale." A woman in a blue suit from ABC News raised her hand. "How did your Numa crew manage to destroy the pirate ship and everyone on board?" The question had to come, and Sandecker had prepared himself for it. As much as he hated to, he lied to protect the Numa scientists and ship's crew from being labeled killers. "As near as we can tell, one of the hijackers guarding the entrance to the lagoon fired a missile in the dark at the Deep Encounter. He missed, and the missile struck the pirate ship." "What happened to the guard?" the woman persisted. "Didn't he live to be arrested?" "No, he accidentally died during a struggle with my special projects director, who was attempting to stop him from firing a second missile at our survey ship." A reporter from the Los Angeles Times caught Sandecker's attention. "Do you know what possible connection there might be between the two incidents?" Sandecker threw up his hands and shrugged. "It's a mystery to me. You'll probably have better luck finding answers from the FBI and CIA during their ongoing investigation." The LA Times reporter motioned for one more question, and Sandecker nodded. "Would that be the same Numa Special Projects Director who was in on the rescue of the 2,500 people on the Emerald Dolphin, who saved your survey vessel from being destroyed, and who saved the lives of those disabled children in New York yesterday during the dogfight?" "Yes," Sandecker said proudly. "His name, as you already know, is Dirk Pitt." The woman in the back of the room shouted the next question. "Do you think there is a connection?" "No, I do not," Sandecker cut her off. "And please don't ask me any more questions on that subject, because I haven't talked to Mr. Pitt since the incident, and I only know what I read in your newspapers and see on your television news programs." He paused, stepped back from the podium, and raised his hands. "Ladies and gentlemen, that's all I know. Thank you for your courtesy." Hiram Yeager was waiting in Sandecker's outer office when the Admiral returned. Dr. Egan's old leather case was sitting on the floor beside his chair. He had a fondness for the old case and had begun using it to take his workload home because it was larger and more square than the common briefcase. He rose and followed Sandecker through the door. "What have you got for me?" asked Sandecker, sitting at his desk. "I thought you might like an update on the CIA's dive project on the hijacker's ship," he said, opening the case and removing a file folder. Sandecker stared at Yeager over a pair of reading glasses, his eyebrows arched. "Where did you get your information? The CIA has given out nothing yet. I know for a fact they've only been diving on the wreck." He paused to glance at his watch. "For the past 10 hours. The project manager insists on running a constant data program every hour. You might say that We'll know what they have discovered almost as soon as they will. If they find out Max is in hacking secret CIA files, we'll catch 20 different kinds of hell. Yeager grinned deviously. Believe me, Admiral, they'll never know. Max is gaining the data from the salvage ship's computer before it's cryptogrammed and sent on for analysis at their headquarters at Langley. Now it was Sandecker's turn to grin deviously. So tell me, what Max found? Yeager opened the file folder and began reading. The hijacker's boat was identified as a 135-foot crew utility workboat built by the Hogan and Lashier Boatyard of San Diego, California. She was designed to service the offshore oil industry in Indonesia. She was considered to have great flexibility and speed. Did they establish who owned her? Asked Sandecker. She was last registered to Barak Oil Company, a subsidiary of Colexico. Colexico, Sandecker echoed. I thought they ceased to exist after they were bought out and shut down. A situation that didn't go down well with the Indonesian government when their main source of oil income disappeared. Who acquired Colexico? Yeager gazed at him and smiled. Colexico was taken over and disbanded by the Cerberus Corporation. Sandecker leaned back in his chair, a smug expression on his face. I'd like to see Charlie Davis's face when he hears this. There won't be a direct tie-in, said Yeager. Ownership of the boat was never transferred. A check through our own library finds no trace of the boat from 1999 to the present. And it's extremely unlikely the hijackers kept any evidence leading to Cerberus on the boat. Have the CIA salvage people identified any of the hijackers yet? There's not much left of the bodies to ID, and the guard at the lagoon entrance went out to sea with the tide. As Dirk suspected, dental records and fingerprints will probably find that those guys were former Special Forces warriors who took discharge and went to work as mercenaries. A common occurrence with the military these days. Unfortunately, there's more money to be made outside than inside. Has Max come up with any theories on what possible motives the directors of Cerberus could have for committing mass murder? She can't create a scenario that makes sense. Perhaps Dr. Egan is the key, Sandecker said pensively. I'll put Max to work on researching the good doctor's life. Yeager returned to his vast computer department and sat down at his keyboard. He called up Max and sat there staring into nothingness while she appeared in holographic form and waited. Finally, he looked up at her over his console. Anything happen while I was with the Admiral? The salvage divers reported finding virtually nothing relating to the pirate crew. No personal effects, no notebooks, nothing except their clothes and weapons. Whoever was in charge of the hijacking operation was a master of the cover-up. I'd like to take you off that project and have you do an in-depth biography on Dr. Elmore Egan. The scientist? The same. I'll see what I can find that goes beyond the normal bio. Thank you, Max. Yeager felt tired. He decided to leave and go home early. He had been neglecting his family since he became immersed in the dolphin incident, as it was becoming known. He decided to take his wife and two daughters out for dinner and a movie. He set the leather case on an open space of the console and opened it to deposit some files and papers inside. Yeager was not a man who startled easily. He was known as being as calm and laid back as a bloodhound. But what he saw stunned him down to his socks. Cautiously, as if he were reaching into a bear trap, he dipped his hand inside the case. He rubbed the substance he encountered between his thumb and forefinger. Oil, he muttered to himself, staring blankly at the liquid that half filled the leather case. It's not possible, he thought in confusion. The case had not been out of his hands since he'd left Sandecker's office.